The last time we spoke with Gabriel Krauss, he gave us some very good insights into the actual ownership of land in South Africa, dispelling a myth which said that 70% of the land is owned by whites. That was from, well, some selective reading of research. It basically took one third of the number and then extrapolated it. We're going to get a little more myth busting today when we talk about BEE, and in particular, the results that have just come out of a World Bank research report into how to get South Africa going again. Gabriel, thank you for joining us. Is this your day job, looking at difficult subjects, researching them, and then sharing with the rest of us?
Yes, it's certainly a big part of it, and it's something that I enjoy. I think South Africa's underperformance is not because of a lack of goodwill, but because of a lack of good insight. So just sharing facts, I think, is very helpful to our country.
And the World Bank report, how much time do you do on something like that to fully understand what it is that they're trying to tell us?
The report itself is pretty short to read. There are some attending documents that are a bit longer. There was the media junket that they did last week, which I wasn't able to attend personally, but I spoke with people who were. So I don't know. Let's say a day into the World Bank reports itself. But I think to understand previous work by the World Bank and by other organizations has taken a number of years to see how we got to this point.
What is interesting from the World Bank report is it's not a isolated suggestion that we re-look the BEE regulations and legislation in South Africa. Harvard University had something similar. The International Monetary Fund had something similar. The Zondo Commission, as you wrote in a piece that you put out yesterday, also recommended the same thing. You talk about a BEE premium, and I guess that's something we should unpack right at the outset. What exactly is it?
So, Acting Chief Procurement Officer of Treasury, who presides over about 1.2 trillion rand of spending, Willie Mathebula, has explained repeatedly that a BEE premium is the legal amount that the government can spend extra in order to procure from a racially preferred buyer. So to give an example from the City of Cape Town's Value for Money report, two suppliers were willing to sell traffic light controllers for about 70,000 rand. There's the original manufacturer, and then there's another supplier selling exactly the same part, exactly the same deal. But the original manufacturer didn't have as many BEE points, so they didn't get the contract, the tender. The supplier that did get the tender sold exactly the same thing for 7,000 rand extra, for 7% extra. I think it was about 6,000 rand extra. So that is a BEE premium of about 7%. Mr. Mathebula has explained that BEE premiums are capped at 25% for contracts under 50 million rand, and they're capped at 11.1% for contracts over 50 million rand. So if you've got a 100 million rand contract legally, you can spend an extra 11.1 million rand for exactly the same building, exactly the same length of road, exactly the same part for a power station. You can spend that extra 11.1 million rand legally in order to go to the company with the higher BEE points. And that's actually legally required unless Treasury gives an exemption.
So it's in the law. It's in South Africa's, it's the rule of law in South Africa, and that's part of our laws. And that is one of the issues that is in very strong debate at the moment, especially as we've run out of money in this country. But when you look back at that premium, where does that on the 100 million rand contract, that 11 million rand, which is just what taxpayers are paying extra, where does it go? Who gets it?
Well, I mean, the company that got the bid. I think that the underlying question there is that money getting the maximum value? Is it getting productivity to grow at the greatest possible rate? And the answer is no. One of the key overall measures that we look to is the fiscal multiplier So economists, including at the South African Reserve Bank, well, they published a working paper at the South African Reserve Bank 2 or 3 years ago, and another group at the UN University more recently published studies analyzing when South Africa's government spends a rand, does it add to the economy? So it goes to this person, but then that, you know, they're spending it on the next thing and it kind of all grows together. Or is it really just wasteful? And to give a sense of things, if the answer is one, that means you spend a rand, you get a rand. In really good cases like South Africa in the mid-2000s under Mbeki and after Mandela, we had a fiscal multiplier about 1.5. So when the government was spending a rand, it was getting 1.5 rands worth of value. As of 2018, it was negative, which is almost the only recorded thing in the world of consistent negative fiscal multipliers. The average over the last 5 years is zero. That means it would literally have been better to burn the money, to pour it down a drain, than to try and spend in the way that it has been spent. So where does it go? That extra, in a sense, is going nowhere. In literal terms, some of it gets shipped offshore, some of it gets squirreled away, some of it gets spent on consumer goods. But in terms of the overall impact on the economy, South Africa's spending on the margins is worse than worthless.
So the money that is extra, and this is the BEE premium that we, the people, do not really understand exists. We think, well, BEE is good because it's uplifting black people. That's the propaganda. But essence, what you've said to us now, up to 50 million rand, you can, in fact, you are required to give the contract at a 25% extra, pay 25% extra, as long as to the best BEE credentials. So if you had two firms with the same product, as you've explained before, the one who has the better BEE credentials is going to get it, and we're going to pay 25% more to them, even though there might be a slight difference, only a very small difference between the two, for instance. How prevalent is this in the economy? How much of South Africa's state spending is actually subjected to this 25% rule, up to 50 million or 11% over that?
So the short answer is just about all of the public procurement spend, which is roughly 1.2 trillion rand per annum at this stage. And that is about 15-17% of GDP. So it's about a sixth, between a seventh and a sixth of the economy. So you can think of it as one day of the week. And I just to sort of revert back to a previous question in terms of where does the money go, I do want to emphasize that the people who take advantage of that extra are not all of one race. As a sort of anecdotal example, I had a scholarship to go to one of the most expensive schools in the country in Sandton. And when I did a research project, I discovered that some of the best BEE beneficiaries were white graduates of that school, who were sons and daughters of very well-established captains of industry, people running JSE-listed companies. So, you know, white people have benefited from these BEE premiums, black people, Indian people, colored people. It's a matter of being able to game the system versus traditional procurement, where the winning company is the one that is best able to deliver value at the end of the, you know, for the consumer, for the customer, being citizens and residents. So, you know, 1.2 trillion rand is subject to these BEE premiums. We applied some pressure to Treasury. Some organs of states applied for exemptions in the last few years. We know that Transnet and Eskom have both been granted case-by-case exemptions. So it's not every single rand that is subject to this, but Treasury has refused thus far to heed our call and the Zondo Commission's recall to allow a maximum value for money approach. And it is worth making the point that, I mean, there's a couple of point about numbers, Alec. If I can just give you a few numbers. Treasury has not been public with this information, but it did disclose in the process of the Public Procurement Bill going through Parliament that its own records indicate that more than half of government spending to private companies, in fact, 60% plus, goes to 50% plus owned black companies. So they did a review of 1.2 trillion rands worth of spending since 2017. So 1.2 trillion, it's a big review. They were only covering a fraction of the whole amount being spent, but it's a big chunk. And of that 1.2 trillion, they found 588 billion was spent on majority black-owned companies. So I'm not talking about just BEE scores. I'm talking about 51% plus black-owned companies. So, you know, 80 billion, 60 billion in 2018, 72 billion in 2019, 90 billion the next year, 94 billion, 101 billion during the plague, 90 billion coming down a bit, 80 billion last year. And that is a fraction of the total government spend, because Treasury didn't review all of the spending. Then we ask ourselves, can we extrapolate? You know, with the earlier conversation, can we extrapolate? No, we can't. Well, Treasury says, yes, we can with this. They said, in submissions to Parliament, very serious submissions, they said these data are representative of the broader amount of spending. And so you run the numbers. It's a very simple calculation. And you find that since 2017, Treasury has spent an estimated 3.5 trillion rand on majority black-owned companies. So the notion that we live in a society dominated by white monopoly capital is debunked. The notion that we require this kind of intervention in order for there to be major established black-owned businesses is debunked. With 3.5 trillion rand already having gone to majority black-owned businesses, we know that we're dealing with a very well-established supply base. And our submission is, the World Bank submission is, IMF submission is, if you now relax these BEE rules, it's going to be free competition for all. A lot of those black businesses are going to keep competing. They're going to do better. And it's going to be better service delivery for ordinary South Africans at a cheaper price, at a time where we don't have enough money to keep paying extra for the racial engineering.
Sounds like a massive scam. Just take that 3.5 trillion, and if you were to use 25% of that, because legally you can pay a premium of 25% of it, that's 800 billion. We've now got a government that's scratching around trying to jack up VAT from 15 to 17% to pay a fraction of that 800 billion. This doesn't sound right. All of it just does not sound right. Why are we not listening as a nation? Why, if the IMF and the World Bank, and then we'll talk about Zondo in a moment, but why are the politicians not listening? Is it as simple as to say, well, their buddies are actually benefiting, so, and maybe even they get funded by those buddies in an oblique way, that they're not countenancing any way of addressing this gigantic scam on the South African people?
I think that is part of it, Alec. We do track the sort of participation of politicians, close relations themselves, family members, business partners, partaking in BEE transactions. And we've got an investigation project that we think will help connect those dots in a more systemic way. But that is not the whole story. Look, we've got a GNU government. We've had a budgetary halt for the first time in the Rainbow Republic's history. And so this is a great opportunity for the Democratic Alliance, Freedom Front Plus, IFP, AC, you know, series of parties, Patriotic Alliance, could be stepping up and saying two things. Firstly, let's get transparent about BEE premiums. Treasury has never even told us how much it costs. You went imagining it's 25% every time. It's probably not that high. But whatever it is, you know, it's certainly billions, tens of billions, maybe hundreds of billions if you add it up over the years. You know, we deserve to know. Actually, the Constitution requires transparency. And I have met with people in a range of parties encouraging them to call for transparency in a very serious way. And I haven't gotten much traction. I mean, you can look at the record. And so I don't want to be too critical in the sense of, you know, some meetings you can't really say the names, but I would very much like the all South Africans to be respected in the basic way required by the Constitution, which is, you know, we pay taxes and Treasury has a duty to tell us how those taxes are being spent. So the first thing is there should be transparency about this. And the people not calling for transparency are also in opposition. Then the second thing is to call for a reduction of BEE premiums down to zero rand. And our polling indicates, polling by the Institute of Race Relations, we asked this very specific question last year. And we found 70% of all respondents, similar numbers across races, 65% of black respondents, said they would like BEE premiums to come down to zero rand. So there's a huge political opportunity for anyone who's willing to have the guts to get up and stand and say it very clearly, repeatedly. You have to be consistent on this kind of thing. We want the premiums to be explicit and we want them to be zero. You have to say it over and over again. You have to use various range of channels. And then you can make some political gains out of that because it's common sense that it's a good idea. It's hard for me to answer the question on why the opposition is not doing it, excepting for the fact that I will say politics is a matter of prioritization. And I think very interesting, important people have said this is not a priority. My humble submission, maybe not so humble, is that this is a huge priority because we are running out of money. And this is a very clear way to save money. Our report estimates that the BEE per annum savings that we could garner is 150 billion rand. And conservatively, 100 billion of that could go to cutting VAT to 11.5% from 15%. Which would directly inject money into the economy, stimulate demand. It wouldn't add to the debt because it would be paid for by cutting the premiums. It would be very welcome relief, or poverty relief for the bottom income group who would not suffer so much VAT. The exemptions don't really work. And it would stimulate business activity because there'd be an extra 100 billion rand instead of the government spending it in a way that adds nothing to the economy. There'd be private consumers deciding how to best make ends meet, how to best buy things that are going to actually make a lasting difference. We think that's a very winning formula in this time of need. We'd very much like to see something like that happen. But unfortunately, it looks like March 12th is going to come by and we might be stuck in the same position where we're effectively taking from ordinary South Africans to give to elite South Africans in a way that destroys value, growth, job opportunities, and so on.
What did the Zondo Commission say about all this?
The Zondo Commission, Volume 1, page starting about around 797, gets into the analysis of the legal mosaic, it calls. And this is really a very important part of the commission because what it's doing is it's saying, you know, we've been sitting for years, spending a huge amount of money, listening to how terribly corrupt South Africa is. Why is it so corrupt? You know, some sociologists or some people with that kind of bent, they'll say it's a cultural thing. Others will say, you know, it's just a few bad apples. But really, there's bad apples in every country and there's cultural problems in every country. There's not state capture at the scale we have had in every country. Just to give a sense underlying the Zondo Report's analysis from the World Bank, we found that the rate of decline of South African government spending effectiveness since 1996, is the fastest of any open democracy in the world, and it's the third fastest of any sort of region in the world. It's an astonishing
part.
So we started out, the World Bank does this analysis of how effective are governments at spending their money. And they've been putting it out every year since 1996. And then they rank all the countries, and then you get a percentile ranking. So in 1996, we were in the top 20%. And we improved a little bit. We stagnated. In the 2000s, we improved a little bit. And then we started sliding and sliding and sliding. So now we're in the 40th percentile. That means 60% of countries are better than us and 40% are worse than us. So there's a lot of countries with worse governments than us. DRC, Somalia, the Gaza Strip, you know, they are, in absolute terms, we're not the bottom of the pile. But if you look at how fast we've gone down, from 80 to 40, there's practically nothing else like it. It's a huge, huge decline. That is state capture. What's happened at the same time is tax revenues as a portion of GDP have inclined dramatically. And if you look at that combination of more and more money going into the government and the government spending it worse and worse, refined the classic definition of state capture from the 19th century. We developed an index which quantifies it and ranks every country in the world. We call that the Fukuyama Index because Francis Fukuyama came and gave a talk to address this point in 2019. On that index, the Value for Money Index, South Africa is the worst performer in the world on these trend lines. So the Zonda report is faced by that. It's the worst case of state capture on record on these macro numbers. And people know what it's like, the potholes, the blights that don't turn on. It's the worst case of it. And he's trying to find the root cause of the problem. And he finds in a systemic analysis, one of the systems levels problems here is the problem in the legislative design. And the problem in the legislative design is that you've got one imperative, which is to maximize value for money in spending all of this government money. And then the other imperative is racial social engineering. And the problem is twofold. He says the first problem is that there is inevitably a conflict between these multiple imperatives being pursued by a single act. You're buying pencils or traffic lights or transformers or a power station. You're trying to do two things at once. Makes it complicated. And the second thing is the way the legislation is set up, it's not transparent. It's not clear exactly how you're supposed to resolve this dispute. And it's that lack of clarity, which is manifest by the fact we don't even know what the BEE premiums are that are being spent at a national level. It's never been published by Treasury. That shows how untransparent it is. As another data point, there was a survey within one organ of state a number of years ago where they asked the procurement officers, are you spending BEE premiums? And half of them said yes, and half of them said no. You know, it's a big problem if your accountants can't even agree if they're spending money on a particular thing. That's how confusing it is. And Zondo says this confusion creates the room, firstly, for good faith actors to make accidental mistakes. And that's a problem. But secondly, and much more dangerously, for bad faith actors to intercede, to move in the shadows and grab whatever they can. So confusion creates discretion. Discretion open spaces for corruption. And that's the language that the World Bank uses. They say that this cumbersome process has opened up spaces for corruption. And that is why they recommend, and that is why Zondo recommended, maximum value for money, unambiguously. He said, you need to choose what's the top priority, value for money or racial social engineering, as per Section 272 of the Constitution, which is an interpretive point. He says, you've got to choose one of these two things as your priority. And ultimately, his word, the Zondo report's words, the national interest is best served by getting maximum value for money in public procurement, and all procurement officers should be so advised. We've repeated that advice ever since, and we note that that came out in 2021. Immediately, there was backlash from the ANC. One of its former NEC leaders called Zondo, or called the judiciary, captured by colonial forces. But since then, the Harvard Kennedy report came out. The IMF came out with multiple reports. The World Bank has now come out with this report. We think Zondo really broke through the wall, and we are very excited to see others walk through it. And we would like South Africa's political opposition to take their turn to walk through the gap in the wall too, and to end BEE premiums.
Why haven't they?
Alec, I'm flabbergasted that they haven't even tried.
Do they not understand it? Have they not done the research? Have they not read the Institute of Race Relations material, which, I mean, you guys have been around for nearly 100 years. It's highly reputable. People all over the world read and know the credibility of the IRR. Why would our opposition parties not pick this up and run with the ball?
I think part of it is an understanding issue. And I think, you know, getting the information out there, I think, does help. It does take time to assimilate. I think people get confused between the difference between the illegal side and the legal side, because, you know, one of the things that we hear is you were estimating, imagine if the premium of 25%, which is the cap, imagine if that was being spent every time. When I speak to some insiders in government, they say, you know, but it's not really the cap that's being spent every time. Part of the reason is that companies have already run away that wouldn't be able to compete on BEE points. So you're not seeing that thing in the procurement numbers. Part of the reason is that sometimes the best, cheapest business is majority black run. So, you know, even if you had no BE premiums, the black run business would be getting the thing. So you're not seeing a cap. And some of the times it is 25%. And some of the times it's 50% or 100% or these markups that kind of don't even fit within the system. So I think a lot of people really want to go after the corruption. And I think in that sense, the ANC has set the agenda by saying corruption is the problem and making out as if corruption can be solved if we just have one more sort of moving speech coming from one more charismatic politician. You know, it's like this time with feeling, Oaks, it's like some rugby moment is going to bring us all together and stop us from being corrupt. That's the feeling that I get. You know, I debated this issue with the former head of Stats SA and Matthew Parks, COSATU's main spokesperson, just 2 days ago on Newsroom Africa. And they both gave this impression. Corruption's the big problem. That's why BEE is not working. But how are you going to solve it? Well, they want to keep the policy. Let's just get more inspired about how we deal with corruption. And unfortunately, I think the opposition is a little bit stuck in that same framework of like going after corruption and being afraid of connecting BEE and corruption. Because there's a wrong way to do that. There's a very wrong way to do that, to make that connection. The right way to make that connection is the way the Zondo report makes that connection. And if they follow that lead, and they follow the lead of the World Bank and the IMF and those who have meticulously tread this path, I think there's a very clear and winning argument to be made. But it does take a bit of understanding, a bit of, you know, readjustment. Don't just straightforwardly go after corruption. Because there are real policy issues that program for corruption. You know, one of the examples I like going to is the United Kingdom. Let's say 250 years ago, it forbade the sale of linen from Belgium, from the Flemish parts of Europe. It forbade the sale of porcelain as well from coming in. The Corn Laws, you know, and at that time, British officials were notoriously corrupt. They had stupid laws that programmed for corruption. They then cancelled those laws, and the corruption reduced significantly to the point where their officials, let's say in the early 19th century, had the reputation of being the most incorruptible in the world. So there is a connection between the system you put in place. We do a lot of systems analysis in South Africa, but very little of the up-to-date nature. The system in place actually does impact the behavior of people, because people chase incentives. And I think that takes a bit of understanding to shift one's mindset from this thing of just like corruption is bad and we must get rid of a few bad apples to no, we actually have to change the system in order to make it possible for the limited resources of the NPA and of the procurement oversight teams to be able to make sure that the bad apples are removed. And that systemic change that introduces transparency, that makes it much cheaper and more efficient to clean out the bad actors. That's what the Zondo report is really focused on. And that's where we think the greatest gains are to be had. That's the winning ticket that we encourage the opposition to take up.
Well, anyone who understands economics knows that human beings are driven by incentives, that if the incentives are skewed, we have many, many examples in history. Just have a look recently at Wells Fargo and the big disaster that happened there. And the incentive there was open accounts. And as a consequence, this huge bank, one of the greatest banks in the United States, was brought to its knees because the people who worked for it were opening accounts in a corrupt manner. And here we have a state that says, no, it's cool. As long as the guys tick all the boxes, you can give them 11% more than you would ordinarily, or 25% more if it's below 50 million. Those are huge numbers anyway, because that's the way that we do things in South Africa. So first things first, we could avoid the VAT increase simply by your numbers, simply by doing away with this BEE premium. And that would mean reassessing the system that we have at the moment. Just to close off with, South Africa's economy, how has it performed under this scenario? You did write in your report something that we haven't done anything since 2007, have not grown in real terms since 2007. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, the World Bank highlighted that as their first data point in their report. So per capita, you look per person, and you control for inflation, you peg yourself to stable international currency. And then you look at what the economy's done, and it has not grown at all since 2007. That's astonishing. I don't think you'll easily find another open democracy constitutional order that has that poor performance record. And you can't just say ANC. It's not just a party, because the ANC governed South Africa from 94 to 2007, and there was great growth there. It's a change in policy that we think is responsible for that, including the entrenchment of BEE, which really kicked in the late 2000s in a big way. The impact that that's had, I think, is most extremely seen in our unemployment numbers, just about the worst in the world, certainly the worst in the world if you look at open democracies. Angola may be just ahead of us at the moment. But over 11 million people are unemployed in South Africa on the expanded definition, over 8 million on the narrow definition. And if you look at black unemployment, former colleague of mine forced me to face this issue because I wanted to just abstract to unemployment overall. But he said, look at black unemployment, because the whole thing of BEE is supposed to be to help those people who got stuck in the shadow of apartheid. And it is true that apartheid viciously and deliberately oppressed the majority of the population, black people, on the basis of their race. That did inhibit people's opportunities, get them stuck in poverty traps. And open economy would release that. But that started to happen in the 2000s. But, 6 million odd black South Africans were still unemployed in 2006-7. That number is now over 11 million. It is roughly a doubling, almost a doubling of black unemployed people in a period where 3.5 trillion rand has been spent on majority black owned companies just in the last 6-7 years. So I think that the picture that creates really is one of entrenched new privilege being defended and financed at the cost of people who found themselves stuck in the shadow of apartheid and then found that shadow extended by a new series of bad rules. And I think that the picture that emerges from that is very gloomy, and I think it also does speak to an opportunity. If you take the advice to make these BEE premiums explicit, even if you just do that first, the fact that it's so unpopular will drive them down to zero. Once they go down to zero, you've got extra money from saving the premiums. You've also got a lot of extra money from making the system transparent, so it's much harder to steal. That extra money can go to improving the conditions required to allow for economic growth. And we think that the best way to do that, paying down the debt and cutting taxes, will really put people who are stuck in poverty-stricken conditions back into a position where they can work their way up. We think there's a huge appetite for that, and that potential energy can be unlocked the moment we come to terms with this harsh reality.
And just remember, there are those who have benefited from it, those who've been gaming the system at the taking all the benefits away from the majority, from most people. It's quite a horrific number that you unpacked there. And we haven't even got on to the point of BEE being a tax on investment. And heaven knows, if you want to ask someone to invest, you can't imagine that they're going to build a business or build a factory if they've got to give away 25% before they even start. It just doesn't happen. Gabriel Krauss is a fellow at the Institute for Race Relations. Thanks for unpacking all this for us, Gabriel. And I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.